Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 105 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Jeanette Ward of the Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome back to the show, Jeanette.
Hey, so happy to finish out this week with these exciting minutes. Probably the best minutes of the movie.
That can be definitely shown that way. You can describe it that way.
That's right. I'm describing it that way. These are obviously the best minutes of the movie.
Well, because you're on them, right?
That's right.
Okay. what other reason could there be? So minute 105.
Me and pancake syrup. Can't beat that.
Well, that was yesterday. There's no pancake syrup today.
Oh, all right.
So, minute 105 begins with the plot thickening and ends with Simon having a request for one of his men. So we ended things yesterday with a lot of reveals. You know, it was revealed that the bomb was fake, both to John and to Weiss, who, as we mentioned yesterday, has yet to tell everyone else that they can be, you know, rest assured that the bomb is not going to go off. You know, we still have Lambert and Connie up on the roof with four kids waiting for that, you know, big loud sound that's going to bring them down to their deaths. So who knows? John saw that the real bomb is on the is on the ship itself. And is just going to have to deal with it.
Are Lambert and Connie, and we talked about briefly yesterday how we know that Charlie is wired into Walt and so that he can communicate to Walt, hey, the bomb's a fake. Are Lambert and Connie wired in? Have they been communicating via walkie-talkies? Do we know that they can be? Can someone let them know? They're up there panicking with those kids. Someone needs to let them know, hey, the bomb's fake, everybody.
I don't know. It's a very good question.
We haven't seen any evidence that they are communicating with people on the ground. So at some point, they're going to have to be like, well, surely we're well past the time when it was going to explode. Let's try to make our way downstairs. Or do we continue to huddle here on the roof?
That's right. That is a great question that I don't know the answer to.
All right.
Because of the fact that, you know, they never tell us. Again, we're not going to see any of these characters in the same situation. We will see Lambert and Connie a little bit later.
The focus shifts. So we don't see what happens to these characters because the focus shifts. And so suddenly the triple fronted action we were getting, where stuff was happening in three different places at the same time, now we shift to really just one. And so we don't know what happens to everybody else. It's not important.
That's right. Apparently it's not. But when you're looking at it the way we're looking at it here, it is something that's very important.
Yes.
You know, I'm, you know, watching it this way, I say, okay, well, you know, why are they leaving us these plot holes?
Yes.
You know, they need to be telling us what's happening to Lambert and what's happening to Connie and what's happening to Weiss. And, you know, they just leave them all in the lurch, you know, pun intended, since we talked about lurch later this week, but still.
Zeus's nephews or whatever, like, we need to find out what happened to them and what the reason. But you know what, I guess we're fine knowing that they are okay and we're supposed to just accept that and move out. Like, they're okay, there wasn't a bomb, they're not going to blow up, moving on.
True. You know, it's anticlimactic from that perspective.
It'd be nice to have that wrap up. Yes.
You know, no, because it's not a question of seeing the wrap up, it's a question of wanting to see their reactions to the whole thing. Yeah, you know, yes. There's going to be a lot of relief, you know, the fact that they don't have to worry about the bomb. Again, Charlie's the only one who knows it's a fake bomb at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's just the way that they decided to do it. I don't know.
Okay.
Again, I guess we can just blame the writer for it. Jonathan Hensley.
Well, the editing, the writing and the editing is so tight everywhere else in this. It's just interesting to find that, like, the one question I'm like, well, OK, okay. It doesn't matter anymore. We can assume they're fine, and we'll just move on from there, I guess.
Obviously, we need to assume they're fine. You know, that goes without saying. But again, why? You know, it would be so much better to see their reactions, the relief. You know, that, oh great, you know, we don't have to worry about this anymore. But no,
like,
you know,
we didn't flop, hooray!
So I don't know. What can I tell you? There's no way of explaining it, you know.
Right, we found the one slight plot hole.
Well, we pointed out a few others earlier in the week. No, earlier in the week, the fact that you know, with the chain.
Oh yes, yeah.
You know, that was just bad editing at that point, or yes, possibly yes. It was done on purpose. I don't know.
Well, that happens when you examine something this closely.
Right. Okay, understandable. So basically, at this point, you know, we ended things yesterday with John looking up and seeing through his own disappointment about everything else that's going on that, you know, he's actually now just been captured by Simon.
Right. It, not only that he's been captured by Simon, which is, you know, disappointing, but also that now he's trapped on a boat with a bomb.
Yes.
Relief that the bomb is not in a school, but disappointment that now not only is he captured by his enemy, he is also trapped on a boat with a bomb.
That's right. And then John turns to Simon and goes, "There was never any bomb in the school, was there?" "Of course not. I'm a soldier, not a monster. Even though I sometimes work for monsters." "No, the real bomb is on this ship." Now, I love the phrase that he says this, but it opens up so many questions about sometimes working for monsters. Okay, meaning he's not his own boss.
No, he's a hired mercenary.
So then the question is asked.
Morally flexible hired mercenary.
Then you can ask the question, who hired him to take care of all this?
Is it Targo? Is he the one who was kind of in charge of this? We already know he's the idealist who wanted to bury the gold. So is he the one who hired Simon?
No, because Targo would have given him an order beforehand to kill John. Not just tell him, you know, nicely, maybe it's time you kill him, you know.
So maybe in the past, Simon has been hired as a mercenary, but in this particular instant, it's his plan. He's calling the shots here.
Okay, but he also mentions, I don't remember if it's before this minute or in the future minutes, about the fact that, you know, that there are some people in the Middle East that will be very happy with what he's doing, because it will change the way, you know, the value of gold in the world.
You know, but that, I mean, honestly, that could just be a general blanket statement. It doesn't mean he's working for them on this particular job.
Okay, of course not. But it seems, you know, it's left very ambiguous from that perspective.
Yes,
because throughout the entire movie, we assume that Simon is working for himself. But there are a few lines here that make it sound that maybe he's not.
Maybe he's not. Yeah.
Don't know. But well, we're gonna leave it on the assumption that he's still working for himself here, and that, because he does talk about the fact that he has an army, that now the army has to decide what country they want to buy. You know, he's not saying, you know, we have to wait and ask, you know, my boss as to what we're going to be doing. So either way could work from that perspective. Zeus starts limping into the room. You know, now that he's been shot.
Being dragged.
Yeah. Well, he's limping, but he's being brought in, and you see that he's still, his lip is still bleeding the same way it was before.
Yeah.
You know, and then Simon picks up the CB that John was using and like twirls it around and looks at him. You know, John then puts a piece together and goes, "Coast Guard. I was telling him where the boat was. Game over, huh?" You know, John realizes that he fell into a trap.
I like this back and forth between John and Simon, right? It is friendly and cordial to a point where, like at this point, John, and he might be, you know, formulating a plan or considering his options, but their back and forth here is very friendly, Or at least mutually respectful. How about that?
Okay. Bad guys tell their ideas to everyone.
I think
It's
at this point,
cordial because
because
it's more
John
cordial
is,
than what we're expecting.
yeah, John is well aware that he's beaten in this moment, and so he's not actively posing a threat to Simon. And so Simon is willing to engage him in conversation at least temporarily, right? If John was screaming and yelling and trying to shoot him and throw him and, swinging with punches, he's not doing that. He's acknowledging that at this moment he's beaten. And so Simon is willing to engage in some dialogue. If John was trying to fight, I think there'd be less dialoguing. So I appreciate the scene. It strengthens the relationship between them. It enhances, Jeremy Irons' portrayal of this character. And it makes Simon a better villain because in these moments he's a little more charming than if he was simply all out bad guy.
Right. Okay. And do you think that this goes along with the whole Gruber family, the way that they act?
Yes, I would say that there's very much similarities here between how slick and charming Hans could be.
Exactly. Now, I think this is the one of the few scenes where you can tell quite easily that there is a connection between Hans and Simon. Because of the calm demeanor in which they're talking.
Yes.
And again, I like that. I think
Yeah.
it
And
works well here.
again, a credit to Jeremy Irons because, as we've said, as the kids say, Alan Rickman ate and left no crumbs. Oh boy, the kids and their sayings. But to follow that performance and to not have the intimidation of how epic it was, but also want to come close but not completely emulate it, I think that Jeremy Irons is very good here in echoing it without replicating it.
Right. Exactly. To show that there is some sort of connection between the two of them, and but not an overly strong connection.
Yes.
A typical familial connection. That's it. The Gruber brothers were brought up the same way, with
Yes.
teaching them to do things in certain ways.
Yeah, they with ice in their veins and a love for money.
That's right. So it makes sense. And then the response that Simon then gives him and goes, not quite over. And then he takes the CB and puts it to his mouth. And I've always found it really funny that he is holding it with a handkerchief. Because
Yes.
like, who cares if he's gonna have fingerprints on here if he's meant to be dead later on?
Right, they already know it's him.
That's right. So I don't get it. Maybe it's because there's blood and he doesn't want to get the blood on him.
Now, that I believe.
Right. But again, I don't know how much he really cares about those things. And then he goes, Bridgeport Coast Guard, come in, please. And then he turns to John and goes, they put you on hold? And he goes, she's told me to stay on the line. He goes, oh God, I love this country.
Yeah.
And then John looks at him and goes, your brother was an a-. And Simon just starts laughing and goes, he really was an a-.
Yeah, but before the laugh, the pause that he takes, and the music layered, and we talked about the score briefly, but the score here and how the music, just that pause before he reacts, layered with the music, is so terrifying. And then he begins laughing.
Right.
But boy, the tension of that moment, whew,
I love how
so
John has to
good.
say it twice. John goes, your
Yeah.
brother was an a-hole, and then he goes, he really was an a-hole.
Yeah.
And like you said, he starts laughing because then he goes, he was an a-hole.
Yes.
You got his number, yeah? Yeah, okay. I like the delivery of his line, he wasn't an a-hole. But I don't like the delivery of the next line where he says, you got his number. It just doesn't, it doesn't flow as well with the way that it is.
Well, at this point, he's convinced. Well, I've got this. I'm winning. John's no longer a threat to me. I'm gonna get away with my entire plan here, all of it, top to bottom. So yeah, whatever. Sure, whatever you say, John McClane. I don't care about you anymore. He's looking past him
Yeah,
already.
but John is trying to rile him up. That's the whole thing here.
Sure. Yeah, but he's not biting. He's like, yeah, whatever you say. I don't care. I've already won.
That's right. That's true. And, you know, Simon is then taken out of his conversation by Katya, who walks up to him and then starts tapping on her watch.
True to her character of having no lines.
That's right. That's right. Do you see what time it says on her watch?
No, not at all.
It looks like it says either 6:30 or 12, depending on if she's wearing it upside down like John does or anything like that. But it's not
And
3 o'clock.
do we know what's expected, like what time it's supposed to
It's
be
supposed to
and
be 3 o'clock. The bomb
what they're
was supposed to go off at
oh,
three.
the bomb was supposed to go off at 3. Yeah. So her watch is set for something else, maybe?
Correct. She's definitely 3.5 hours ahead. You know, because I'm assuming that it's 6:30 on their watch. So, you know, it tells us what time they filmed the shot. But I love how John how you know, Simon has to be reminded by her. You know, we're on a timetable here.
Simon was about to get distracted by having a perfectly lovely conversation with John McClane, so she has to step in and be like, yeah, we have things to do,
That's right.
sir.
And then Simon says to him, "Forgive me." And then he turns to the guy below him, the guy next to him, and goes, "Would you help Mr. McClane?"
So polite.
Yes. You know, please take care of our guest. He does it in a very polite fashion. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's the way this minute and this week ends. So
It's pretty
did
good.
you?
I mean, all things considered.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
Let me check my notes. No, I just to highlight, I love the scene between the two of them because previously, having not, it been shared the same space. Yeah, it quality scene.
Definitely. Now, is there anything you would say about the movie in general that you haven't that we haven't talked about?
No, I think I really like it. That the mass sequence of the you got the 5 gallon and the 3 gallon, and you've got to put exactly 4 gallons in the 5 gallon one and put it on the thing. Every once in a while, I think about that problem and try to remember how to do it, and it's a stumper every time. But
Speak to
I
Lisa.
will
She can
never forget
explain
the
it to you.
chest. Never forget that Chester A. Arthur is the 21st president, thanks to this movie.
Even though there
And
is no
yeah.
Chester A. Arthur Elementary School in New York.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah. I learned a lot. I find it entertaining. The performances are always good. It always that scene of like things to look out for if European terrorists are pretending to be New York City cops going up and down an elevator where they say things like lift.
Yes, and dogs and cats.
So, yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think we
But
found like four
yeah,
things. I think
overall,
we found four things in that conversation, you know, that were incorrect.
I did. It's always a little interesting the final climax of this movie and how it takes place up at Niagara Falls or wherever it does. It always feels a
Montreal,
little bit
Montreal.
odd that it ends, either ends and then ends. It's a little bit weird that it has this weird kind of post tag. So I don't know. Sometimes that feels a bit off, but overall, really like it. Happy to be here. Got some great
Yes,
minutes.
you did. You definitely did. Even though all the minutes in this movie are great.
Correct.
All right, great. So, once again, nothing to say about the script, but every Friday we have a segment called Name That Movie. It's a little game that I put together where
Okay.
I mean, you know that this movie was had a different title originally, correct? Do you know that?
I
It was known as
didn't.
Simon Says. That's the
Oh,
original
yes, I
script.
think I did
Okay.
know that.
So
Okay.
basically what I decided to do was I went through and made a list of movies that have original titles that were something different.
Oh.
So basically the game is very simple. I will give you the name of an original title. Some of them are real titles that were going to be used, or some of them are fake titles. You know, like Blue Harvest was the fake title for Return of the Jedi, that type of thing. You know, that they weren't really going to use it, but it was still you know, it's still being used at the time of production. of the ones you do, there's one that works that way. So one that's a fake title. And so I'll give you the name of the title and the year, and you have to try and guess what the movie is. You have lifelines. You can I can give you names of different actors, I can give you the names of the director, things like that to try and
All
help
right.
you along.
Yeah, I'm not gonna promise to be any good at this, but we'll give it a
Okay, but
shot.
we're gonna start off with a real easy one for you. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so from 1977, Adventures of Starkiller.
Star Wars.
Exactly.
Star Wars Episode One, A New Hope.
Star Wars Episode One, Episode Four.
Episode Four. Star Wars Episode Four, A New Hope. Episode One.
Exactly.
By the chronologically.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Okay, the next one from 1982. Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
Is it The Secret of
Yes,
Nim?
it is.
Okay, I was like, wait, but that, yeah, all right.
That's a movie that I always loved. I read the book also when I was a kid, and I always loved the movie. And when I've recently rewatched it, recently, basically within the last 10 years, I'm trying to remember when I saw it, I was just amazed by the fact that the NIM is the NIMH, which is, part of the NIH and stuff like that, the National Institute of Mental Health. So I just find it really funny that they decided, when they wrote, when the book was written, they decided just to make that a name of something. Yeah. Okay, next one from 2018 and 2019. Okay. This is a fake title. The movie was called Mary Lou. The biggest hint that I gave you was the fact that it takes place over 2 years.
Yes.
So try to think about what movie came out in both 2018 and 2019 that would make sense that it would have a fake title.
I am thinking, and I feel like this is going to be one I really should know. And the fact that it's called Mary Lou, I feel like is a huge hint because it deals with 18 and 2019. Now, I the time over the last few years, I don't remember what came out when. I don't think that was over 2 years. Is it Star Wars Force Awakens? Is it? No, I don't know.
Oh, come on, you're giving up too easily.
Well, give me a hint.
Okay. One of the stars, and there are many of them, is Evangeline Lilly.
Oh, Avengers Endgame?
Yes, it's both.
A
It's
Avengers
both.
Infinity War slash
That's
Endgame.
right. Exactly.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm glad you didn't give up on that one. Okay, next one from 1958, Darkling, I Listen.
You know that I have no idea.
Oh, I know that you do because we even discussed it I think yesterday.
1958. Yeah, I might need more. What else can you give me on this?
Okay, one of the stars is Kim Novak.
Yeah, that's not gonna help.
Okay, another star is
1958.
okay, the lead actor is Jimmy Stewart. We just talked about this yesterday.
Yeah, that's not helping. I'm trying to think about what Jimmy Stewart movies we talked about yesterday.
Was about jumping from roof to roof.
Oh yeah. What was the Rear Window?
Nope.
Vertigo.
Vertigo, vertigo, vertigo.
Okay.
Excellent.
I was like, what's the one where he's, yeah, all right.
Okay, and the final one from 2005, a movie called Out of the Night.
2005.
Yes.
What is the night?
Out of the Night.
And who does that star?
You have Tim Robbins in it.
Is it Night Stalkers?
Nope. It also is Miranda Otto.
Well, now that's somebody I haven't thought about in a while. Arthur Knight, Robbins, Jacob's Ladder.
Jacob's Ladder was a lot
Is he
earlier.
in that?
No, but well, Tim Robbins is, but Jacob's Ladder is like 1989. That's not 2005.
Really? Wow, Tim Robbins has had a longer career than I been given him credit for.
Okay, apparently.
Anybody else on this?
Dakota Fanning.
That doesn't help.
If I give you the main star, it'll definitely give it away in 2 seconds, probably.
Will it
What?
though? What? Let me think
Okay,
about.
first of all, Jacob's Ladder was
Yeah, no.
1990. I was off by a year. There you go.
Okay, all right. Still, that's for me. That is my Tim Robbins
Well,
reference
it was
point.
post-Bull Durham, so, and
Not super
pre
familiar with his.
pre Shawshank, so, okay.
What's the movie he did with Martin Lawrence? Is it that one? I have the soundtrack to that.
The one with Martin Lawrence?
Yes. Something about trouble, I think. Anyway, Dakota
It's not the
Fanning,
one,
Tim
it's not
Robbins.
this one, that's for
Yeah,
sure.
I don't know.
Okay, the lead actor is Tom Cruise.
Tim Robbins, Dakota Fanning. Oh, it was War of the
That is
Worlds.
correct.
Boy,
War of the Worlds.
Tim
So
Robbins.
the
Forgot he was in it.
yeah. So the title of Out of the Night was they wanted to use it to surprise people that is the same story as War of the Worlds, but apparently when they sent it to focus groups, they hated it. So they decided
I
to.
tell you what, I saw that in the theater, and Tom Cruise, if I ever meet him, he owes me $11 for that nonsense. I didn't care for that movie.
I'm surprised you remember that you paid $11 back in 2005. That's even more impressive than the fact that you didn't like the movie.
That's a rough estimation. It's a rough estimation.
Okay.
Honestly, I should charge him full price now based on inflation or whatever, so he can give me the $18 or whatever it is now. He can afford it. Honestly,
maybe.
I feel like Tom Cruise, if I met him and was like, hey man, I saw War of the Worlds in theater and I didn't care for it, I feel like he probably would give me some money back.
Okay, you can keep dreaming that. I'll let you believe that. But when your brother in one of his coffee shop episodes sees Tom Cruise, have him ask him.
I will.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much for playing. You see, you did much better than you thought you would. So
You know, I tried.
that's all we can ask for here, right?
That's right, yeah.
All right, excellent. So, Jeanette, would you like for one final time this season to tell people where they can find Jeanette Ward?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me out there on all the socials. Best one is Instagram, so that's at j.y.ward. And then, of course, you can find some of my movie reviews. Again, not current, working on it. jwardadventures.blogspot.com. And then, yeah, check out my belly dance troupe over at tamarindbellydance.com. See what we're up to. And that's about it. But thank you, Rob. Always a pleasure. I appreciate you inviting me to be here.
And I appreciate you taking the time to join us. It's been a lot of fun. I've had a great week. I hope you have too. And more so, I hope that all the listeners have. They've enjoyed our conversation about Die Hard with a Vengeance. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. So everyone have a great weekend. And until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee ki
When
yay!
the troops are marching home again, hurrah, hurrah! We'll give them a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.